Yo.
Yo.
So Juana's here.
Hey.
Juana, for anybody that doesn't.
Did you say Juana?
Juana. Oana. Probably if you're listening, you probably know who Juana is. But in case you don't, Juana is an amazing architect and professor, one of my best friends. And basically we had an office together called Family from 2010 or so until the beginning of this year, and then we started our own offices. Well, we met a couple years before that working at Rex. So anyway, that's as much as I got. So usually we talk about like how people started their practices, but that seems a little weird.
Yeah. What were you doing 10 years ago? I know, this is awkward because I assume if you do it following the logic of the podcast, like, we would have a fake conversation because we already know everything.
What was your first project? Oh, me too.
I mean, we probably have different perspectives. Wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, we haven't really talked about much about what the last 8-9 months. Like, I think people would...
Yesterday you told me we'd talk about high school in Romania.
We will. We'll get there. We can just jump right into that if you want.
Sure, okay.
So, I mean, it'd be rad, I think, to hear just what you're doing now. What are you doing now?
Now I'm sitting on a... I was going to say
today?
Podcast. God damn it. Okay, this for real, today?
Yeah. Like, what'd you do today? Okay. What does your job entail?
Oh, job.
No, sorry, what'd you do today? We'll start there.
They're not necessarily the same question. Sheesh, be precise. Well, I went to Central Park this morning with Perry, my dog. If you don't him, then you're really missing out on dog life. And we worked out for a bit, and he was really hyper because he's gorgeous in Central Park. It was beautiful. Anyway, then had a Skype call with someone back in Romania for a project I'm doing in my hometown. And I emailed a bunch, and then I talked to Ashley, and then I went to a meeting with the Play Labs, and then briefly touched on the base with the pool people for something, and then I ended up here, I think.
Pretty solid, all before three.
Thank you, internet, for making that possible. It also doesn't necessarily imply it was all well done, but yeah.
But you did it.
I did it, yeah.
So besides all this, none of that had anything to do with also the fact that you're teaching at a couple different schools, which I'm sure also have take up some time.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you teaching?
Not as much time. I keep saying, like, teaching for me is a hobby. And it's the only way it is interesting is as a hobby. And when I mean hobby, meaning it's like, it's not the main thing. For me, teaching is only interesting if I also practice and if I also work. That's one. And two, teaching too, at least in architecture, I don't know who or why they're listening. But for non-architects, teaching in architecture, I teach studio, which is basically design, which to me is no different than the way I run my own office or the way you create projects. You're basically sitting down with students and you're going through projects and trying to, you know, make awesome projects, basically. So, and I always feel lucky in doing so. I'm always like, man, I can't believe I'm getting paid to do so. Because it just is a lot of fun. So Ashley, who works with me, she came last week to the GSD. So I basically teach at Harvard GSD in Cambridge and at the Architectural Association in London. I really lucked out there. It's kind of amazing to be at these two schools and on different continents in different contexts too. So Ashley came with me or came to visit the GSD last week because we tried to do something that I called a model making boot camp. Which ended up, I think, being a lot of fun, at least for me, I think, and I hope fairly worthwhile for the students too. But we basically took over a space for a couple of days and everyone was just kind of designing and making models from that space, which usually you don't, like, basically a little bit like an office, meaning you just benefit, you're trying to feed yourself off everyone's energy. And there was a lot of fun. Perry was there too. That's off the record.
Is he not allowed at school?
I don't know.
I mean, yeah, photos.
So far, everyone who stopped by was really happy to see him.
The model making workshop.
Yeah.
That's not something that's universal across the studios, I take it, right? That's something you guys decided to do?
Yeah, we our section, or I proposed it. The semester I'm teaching is called Core 3. It's the third semester in graduate school. So that's their largest, their biggest and most complex project they're dealing with. And it's really challenging in a way because you want to have fun too. If you don't have fun, it's not worthwhile. But you're also trying to wrangle a monster of a project. Like it's always mixed use and a large scale project. And you have to consider things like structure, MEP, code, stuff like that. So it's always rather challenging. But again, we're trying to just make it fun. And we're at that point in the semester where we had that window, but it was also crucial to kind of step back and reconsider for a second, okay, how do you push this forward? Now that you're kind of in control and have an understanding of the program, how do you make it into something awesome?
Had you planned the reason I'm harping on this model making workshop is just, I think, not so much the workshop itself, but even the process of teaching or running a studio. Had you planned at the beginning of the semester that, whatever week we're in, you were going to run a model making workshop, or was it a reaction to you seeing how the studio was going?
I called it a boot camp. I think it was... it's something I always wanted to do. You're just kind of waiting for the right time. It's hard to, from my experience, it's really hard to pre-plan. I mean, I have a couple of things that I don't know I want to touch on or do throughout the semester. And then you're kind of just waiting for the right time because shit takes time, basically. I noticed that in general. It takes about 2 weeks between me saying something, like we need to do massing models or we need to do plans, and actually starting to have those. And it's partially simply because things are very complex and they take longer than I expect. So if I'm used to a certain type of speed in my office or with my own work, it's very different in school. And I sometimes keep forgetting that, but that's why I try to always... So I it's almost like knowing, okay, this is going to happen at one point. Let's see what the right time for it to happen is.
Do you... I was going to ask what the difference between your teachings at GSC and AA are, but where the... I feel like that's less interesting than... Are you constantly bringing this... Like, are you looking at teaching as a way to inform your office?
I don't see any difference necessarily between teaching or office or me or whatever. Like, it's all the same brain that everything goes through. And every conversation builds on top of the other. So that's why I enjoy teaching for several reasons, because it definitely... I'm learning a lot in the process of teaching. And that's also a good main reason why I do it. You constantly have to... You're basically trying to help something in what I consider to be a rather intimate process, that of discovery, that of design, that of creation. And I'm not interested in the students replicating my own way of thinking or looking at the world. I'm waiting from, they're oftentimes like, what do you want me to do? And I'm like, I don't know. What do you want to do? I'm not interested in them doing plus-shaped pools or round bridges or anything like that. So I'm waiting for friction and for interesting conversations, basically. And I'm up there to be challenged. So... I just don't see a distinction between none of the things that I do and basically the office work. It all ends up being feeding into each other or off each other.
Like I think you said, it's all part of the same brain. Mm-hmm. Do you have, like, whether it's whatever medium it's through, work, teaching, writing, running, is there a... Let's see, a clear or directed point of investigation or study or goal that you're going towards, or it's all just kind of building, like, through intuition and experience? Like, are you saying, like, I need to learn X and I'm going to try X. I need to study this, do this.
I'm learning how to swim. Or not that I'm learning, I know how to swim, but I'm taking swimming lessons, and I know this does not answer what your question was at all. But I really like, actually, and I'm always taking them right before studio too. And it's just something so nice to be in the process of learning something. Again, I know how to swim. It's more like improving it and trying to just get better at it. And it's so nice to be in a place where you're consciously learning something. I know in theory we're all learning throughout our lives, of course. But to accept that simple thing of, oh, I have stuff to learn, and to have to listen to someone and be told and try to pay attention, I don't think I ever was very good at that. But so it's really nice to be in that moment and then go to studio and, kind of flip roles to a certain degree. I remember recently when I was doing something in the pool, I don't know, I messed something up and I was like, oh man, I always do this. And my swim coach was like, let's not say always. I was like, that's such a good point. I need to remember that. To your question, right now, or I mean, I just want to do awesome work and enjoy the process. And I kind of, meanwhile, know myself well enough to know if something is of value to me or to just to me in general. Too late. Oh. You missed the photo shoot.
Who'd I flick off?
I don't know. No, I was looking. So it you just want to do awesome stuff, and sometimes it's about the stuff, the end project, and sometimes it's really just meeting amazing people along the way and just trying to further those conversations. Mm-hmm. That's always mind blowing to me. And both teaching and actually my work, I feel, are the perfect excuses to do that, to just hang out with awesome people, basically, at the end of the day. That's really my primary driver, but not as a specific, I want to build a mountain mm-hmm. tomorrow or whatever.
You already built a mountain.
Yeah.
Well, I ask because I think one of the interesting thing about a lot of the guests is that virtually everybody on the show is in a pretty amazing place and certainly still developing and growing, mm-hmm. et cetera. but it's rare, and actually the kind of myth of having a goal you want to achieve and like fighting to get there. Not a lot of people work that, like most people don't really work that way. It's sort of intuitive about like pursuing an interest at the time, or even like the swimming as an analogy. I know this is too linear about it, but like the process of learning is the interesting part. It's not like you want to hit a certain time in the pool or you want to learn a certain stroke necessarily as an end game, I can imagine.
No, the opposite, actually. Okay. The only way to learn, I think that's the nice thing about swimming, is you can measure yourself. And I actually measure the, like, basically weekly progress, and that's really fun. And it is in the strokes, and it is in the whatever, there's certain criteria. But I do think having certain, at least in, that's the nice thing about sports, it's pretty straightforward. You can measure progress. I think on a professional level, it's a little bit different. I know, I mean, I guess technically on paper, one should have 5-year plan, 10-year plans. I mean, in general, I tend not to plan, partially because I feel everything that happened to me was way more audacious than I would have dared to plan. So then if I would have stuck to my plans, I would have missed out quite dramatically, which might seem like a backwards way of doing it, but in general, I'm always trying to be fluid and flexible. That's one. And two, I'm not very interested necessarily in building a business, or building a business is not a priority. It's a secondary effect to just doing some work. And that's why I think if your primary goal is to build a business, then yeah, you should probably have a 1-3 year old year plan, sorry. But that in itself is not what drives me. Mm. Also, on a sidebar, completely the way I see it, and it partially might be a result because of last year's experiences, but I think part of me was always like this, very much focused on the now. I feel that's all you have really now. The past doesn't, it's gone. You can sit on it as much as you want, but you're not getting that back. Every second is, you know, precious by itself, and tomorrow is no guarantee. So really it's more like now is all you have, so just run with that.
So in regard to last year's experiences,
lung cancer.
I was going to say, I don't feel like I'm going to explain it well. So can you explain what
lung
your
cancer?
Last year's experiences
Do
were?
Do not smoke. I was diagnosed basically with lung cancer in January of 2017. I was lucky. It was the best kind of lung cancer. But it was a very atypical case in the sense that the average lung cancer patient, the average age of the lung cancer patient is somewhere in the like 70s or 80s. So I'm half the age, I'm not a smoker, and in, on paper it doesn't make sense somehow that I would necessarily have it. And I'm saying that only because once I had it and I dealt with the whole thing, I became very vocal or talked publicly or in general quite a lot about it, which is very against my nature in general. But I think I felt somehow, to me, it was such a huge learning curve, and I felt like, look, guys, if this can happen to me, it can happen to anyone. Like, literally, it can happen to any of you. So just go home, hug your loved ones, just, you know, live life. You're basically, what I was trying to say in a way, and I know you can't, you're basically trying to share everything you learn in the process, and it's in a way, it's impossible, because it's just trying to tell everyone, you're fucking lucky, you have a great life, just appreciate it. Whatever you think is, like, clouding your day, forget about it. But again, I don't know to what degree that's actually truly possible.
Well, maybe part of that is like, how did, once you realized you were recovering, mm-hmm. or safe, I guess, mm-hmm. Or the surgery went well and you woke up and you realize it's, I'm sure there's a point there where you felt maybe it's more safe than others. How did, I can only imagine it had a very profound effect on how you not only pictured your life, but actually let's say your work. Mm-hmm. Did your relationship to architecture in general or what you wanted to do architecturally change?
Well, two things. One, I wouldn't call it feeling safe. I would call it recovering, because if anything, you learn that you're never safe. And on the other hand, it was a little bit like, fuck architecture. Mm-hmm. Meaning it's not about architecture, it's about how you spend your time. And I think part of me, that's the funny thing, the way I would best articulate it is, it's not so much like you're being changed or transformed, at least not for me personally, because I think it came a point in a life when I already knew myself fairly well. But it's almost like you become you and Steri. It's like all the bullshit, all the pretense kind of falls away. You just don't have the bandwidth for that kind of things. Everything that you're hesitating about, everything that you're kind of afraid of doing without necessarily admitting that you're afraid, or everything that you're telling yourself you're not ready for yet, everything that you think you're kind of planning on doing tomorrow all of a sudden becomes a priority, and you're thinking less about tomorrow and more about today. And that does affect how I look at my work and how I run my practice and how I do work too. It is not one-to-one, I'm only doing whatever hospice projects or cancer-related projects or anything like it. But it's more about a philosophical approach to every day, to the project. Yeah, for sure.
Is there something you can talk about that you've done since that you don't think you would have done before?
I don't think it's about, well, you mean project?
No, sorry, with yourself, like in your life.
Oh.
As I'm eating a peanut, sorry.
It's probably a bit hard to articulate. I mean, anything I'm doing now, I wasn't doing before. So in a way, everything is fundamentally already different. And I think it's basically, it gave me... basically, if anything, there are two side effects. I think one I can't remember, but one is it made me very averse to compromise the whole experience. Like, I just don't have time for that anymore. And it's a little bit of a fuck it attitude. So everything that was probably on my mind, or I didn't necessarily felt was the time for before, that's a wrong way of putting it. But basically, I'm less concerned, and I, if you would have asked me before, I didn't think I was concerned with how what I'm doing, how it is perceived, or what box it falls into, or so on and so forth. But I'm even less concerned now. Like, I generally do not give a shit, and I'm very clear and becoming clearer and clearer what I don't give a shit about and what I care about, and that allows me to basically embrace, what I want to do and how I want to have fun. Rather than give in to things. Like, for example, I was like, fuck, I should get a website. But then I'm like, I don't give two shits about having a website. I don't want to make that an effort. I don't want to put my money in there, and I don't care about having a website. And who am I doing it for then? And then I'm like, well, fuck it. You don't... Mm-hmm. who's to say you need that? So I'm trying to... We're doing this thing... Yeah, there is an oven in here baking bags.
We're baking plastic bags. Don't worry about it.
But basically, I completely lost it.
Website?
Oh, well, website or whatever. So it's there are a few results in the working. I think the other thing, too, I took a lot of this year, and including now, I'm still taking a lot of time in making sure I'm making the right steps. So I'm in no rush in a way to... jump or to I'm trying to avoid all the external pressures. I feel New York is also very much, what are you doing, who are you doing it with, blah, all that kind of shit. And you're like, I realized, okay, this is gonna sound crazy, but the other day I was looking at my dog at home. He was just sleeping, having a good time, and I'm like, oh, poor dog, he's just at home all day, maybe I should, you know, entertain him, do something for him. And I'm like, he's a dog, he's living the life. He's having a good time. What the fuck is wrong with me to even think that, like, poor dog, he's just sleeping. He's, so I'm like trying to learn from him, basically. Like,
just sleeping sounds great.
Just sleeping sounds great. No, but it is trying to, yeah, to well, it's going to sound terrible, live a little bit more, but think more, like, basically be brave in front of the pressures. It always bugs me when these pressures that have very little to do with what we actually want to do end up driving our, you know, our lives to a certain degree. So a lot of it is fighting that and just ignoring all that shit and kind of just doing your own thing. Work-wise, too, I think I'm less interested in having... I'm way more interested in... What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to have a practice of a very collaborative nature. Like, I can tell you, I don't want to have an... I said that before, I don't want to have a business. Not that I'd be in any danger of it, but a business in the sense, or office in the sense of a 50 people employee thing. Like, that would be my kind of worst nightmare right now. And not worst nightmare, it's just like I'm not interested in approaching things from that way. And because of that, instead of that, also because I get bored really easily, I'm particularly interested in collaborating a lot more. But I realized I'm meeting all these awesome people. I just want to learn from them and do things together with them. So and I think there's always this problem or this thing in architecture which always kind of bugs me too, is you grow an office depending on one or two projects, and then the project falls away and the office kind of dies down, and there's this kind of flux. It's hard to scale architecture. It gets big really quick. But, you know, Mendes da Rocha, for example, what I'm saying is not remotely new by any means. Mendes da Rocha has one employee that's a Pritzker Prize nominated architect. So I think I'm certainly not the first one to try to approach things from a different nature, but I'm enjoying this aspect of collaboration a lot more because my teaching is based on collaboration. The AA studio is with Virgil Abloh and with Lucy Stiles from Sana and Simon Taylor. And then some of my projects are similar, and sometimes we just sit down with certain people and find reasons to do things together. And it's really exciting. And it's the same with school too, whether it's workshops or lectures or seminars. I'm really just trying to think, okay, how am I going to have a blast with this? Like, what's the kind of craziest things we can get away with now?
Has it affected, or maybe, you know, yeah, has it affected how you see the actual architecture itself? Because, I mean, obviously it's affected the process of how you work and want to work, affected your interest in how it's perceived, or lack of interest in how things are perceived, especially. But in terms of, like, do you see the role of architecture differently?
Like, in a role of architecture in the society, or?
Not professionally. I mean, literally, like the point of a building. Or a bench, or a park.
I definitely think we need more benches. I remember when I was sick, and I was recovering, and I could barely walk upstairs, coming off the subway in Lafayette. It was like three flights of stairs. Fuck me, that was intense. This shit is shitty in this city. this city can be brutal to old people. And then I couldn't walk longer than one or two blocks. Without sitting down or just resting. And I was like, why aren't there any benches here? What's up with this place? I don't know that it necessarily... It recalibrated my focus. If I think up until now, and it has to do with where I was in my life, professional life and personal life when it all happened, when the whole kind of experience happened, because I basically just refocused. I think, you know, in your first years outside of school and in your first year of your own studio, you're just excited to do anything. You're just going to run with it. You're just excited to learn and kind of run with it. And now I'm a big part is, okay, what do I need to say no to? I think saying no became very crucial. And not in an arrogant way, but kind of, okay, this is not a good fit. Mm-hmm. And so it's really just more a refocusing on the type of, I think, architecture or experiences or designs that I care about. But it didn't really change things. I mean, I always think architecture can be amazing, and there's too little of it that is amazing. And we live in cities. We spend 99% of our time surrounded by these way too often ugly as structures in artificial light. And if I have a goal in life, if at all, is to kind of show people the beauty and power of design. And I think design has been given a bad name in the last, you know, decades. And kind of has been treated as one of the superfluous, kind of like a luxury of sorts, like here's a rounded corner or whatever. But both beauty matters on the one hand, but on the other hand, too, design is, I think, a lot, are you beeping? A lot more powerful than that. Like it's political, it's social, it's environmental, it has huge implications. And then on the other hand, and that came from teaching in the last years. I think we are living in a time of fundamental change, and I'm not talking necessarily about politics, but really the way we live now is, or the times, I keep thinking, I wonder if it's similar to what happened in the 60s, when there was the Vietnam War, the sexual revolution, and the civil rights movement. I kind of feel we're living in similar times, because basically the younger generations, and for example, students, especially undergrads right now, they grew up in a time, they can't remember a time before iPhones or before the internet or anything like it. And that automatically alters the way you think about it. With the development of technology, of course, there's also biotechnology with all the risks that comes from that. And then, of course, there's the issue of climate change, which is huge. So I think the whole world, in a way, in the decades to come, we're going to experience fundamental changes. And it's our job, in a way, to think of that, of how do you want to play into that. I think, in a way, it's a luxury. Like, if you have to just pay bills and you know, if you have five jobs, it's really hard to try to think of the long-term implications and where you fall into this. But I think that's the risk, too, because that means there's only very few people involved in that conversation. So if anything, I think I'm, especially in teaching or so, I'm particularly interested in that, in just instigating youth to take over that change and do it so responsibly. But also there's this huge need of change. Like, the way I look at it, the world could be a lot more awesome. So the question is, how do we get there, especially now having the opportunities that we have, but also facing the challenges that we face?
What? Oh, Ryan. Ryan says hi. You're wearing one of Ryan's shirts?
Sold out. Is it sold out Instagram? Something like that. You guys should check
this
out
item
his
sold
Instagram.
Out? Is that what it is?
The brand is called Sold Out.
No, I know, but isn't it called This Item Is Sold Out?
This item is sold out, sorry.
Jesus Christ. And you're wearing the shirt.
This was an awfully complicated. Is this the moment where you have to write hashtag ad? I love it. No, it's I generally do. It's my second. This is sold out. This item is sold out.
What's it called?
Sorry, Ryan. I don't actually read stuff. There you go. Someone posted it.
All right. So high school.
High school.
Or Romania, or both.
You're trying to figure out if I've been to high school.
Have you been to high school? No, I mean, I like even obviously the lung cancer was a major piece of your life. Point. None of them seem significant enough. I was like, thing, major thing in life. But was there, I guess a simple question is, like, did you always imagine that you would be, let's say, your own boss or kind of an independent person, practitioner, worker type? I don't know how to ask.
Sorry, Ryan. No, he's...
Like run your own office?
Absolutely never. But again, because I'm not, I was just taking things step by step. So it wasn't necessarily, it was more interest, or especially being young, I was always interested in exploring things and doing things. But I never cared about having my own office. I never cared about making, or like, you know, saying, I did this, I built this. I just don't personally care about that. And to this day, that's still true to me, because whenever there's an opportunity, like, I know the things that fit me, but I'm extremely happy to throw stuff at other people. And I think my side job or like second passion is really just sort of connecting dots, instigating people, allowing, connecting things, because I've got here because people helped me, and I'm just happy to to again share those opportunities where they are. So I never cared about that. It's just that at one point I got bored of working for other people. In the same time, I was working with you, and I never had that kind of collaborative experience before, like productive collaborative experience before. And then it just kind of happened.
Did you want to be anything else before going to architecture school? Like, were you like, I want to be a... I don't know if I've ever asked you that before. What did you want to be before being an architect?
That's a good question. I don't think I wanted to be anything. It was just like, I am.
I'm just me. I'm enough.
I was pretty content just like being, I don't know. Not really. I would have to ask my parents, but I don't think so, actually. I probably, as a kid, I probably went through all the usual kind of suspects, but nothing really. I definitely didn't have an idea. And architecture, when I chose architect, it wasn't like, oh, I want to be an architect. It was more like, okay, this seems, I'm not sure how an architect spends their day. My mom was an accountant, and I knew that she was in an office all day. And then my dad was, he's a mechanic, or like he's an engineer, and he was building and designing boat ship engines, like giant structures the size of a building. And I would visit him in a factory, and I was like, well, that's interesting too, but I also don't want to be stuck in a factory. So so we're definitely these two sides, the analytical and the creative, which seemed to me appealing in architecture, but I had no idea about what architecture meant, what it entailed. And I didn't know how an architect spends their time, and that's what actually made it, the openness of it made it interesting. And then actually working through it, I think that intuition proved way more right than I would have ever expected. I was like, things just got better and better. Like, it became my ticket to travel around the world and explore different universes. So I was like, shit, it's actually it's actually worked out pretty good.
Was your school or your town or the kind of community that you were growing up in, was it encouraging of getting out of Romania? Or going somewhere else?
In principle, I guess so. I mean, what happened in Romania at the time, so this was like, what, the decade after the revolution, after communists fell, you definitely had a lot of people for whom it was a stated goal to leave the country. That was never the case for me. I think I'm kind of part of a German minority too, so I grew up in...
You're sorry, you're part of a what?
German minority in Romania. So I basically, that meant I went to German school till eighth grade, and there were all these kind of programs. So I would go for 3 weeks every summer to Austria or somewhere in Germany and live there with a family and attend German school, whatever, which was always super weird because it's different universes. But because of that, I felt I had some exposure to the Western world, and I didn't necessarily feel like, oh, I need to leave the country. I never had that. It was never a goal. It really just happened. But there definitely was a lot of... It was a thing people were doing at the time, leaving the country, if only for jobs or eventually returning. But there was definitely a big trend. But apparently there was this one conversation that I actually don't recall, but my mom told me about it, where I was with my parents and with my brother, and my brother was asking if we were going to move to Germany when we would grow up. Basically, all my parents' family friends, they moved to Germany in the 80s. It was really bad in Romania in the 80s. But my parents kind of stayed put because they said, it's going to get better, it's going to get better. So we had a lot of family friends outside of the country. And so my brother was asking, do you think we'll move to Germany, or are we going to move to Germany when we'll grow up? And apparently I was like, Germany, maybe America. I have no idea where this was coming from, because I had no connection or tangential, or I don't know what I imagined, or where, I have no idea.
MTV?
Where that was coming from. We had British, UK MTV. So not that either. I think Michael Jackson is the closest I can think of. And I'm saying that because, I was listening to, you know, Dangerous was a big deal when it sort of came out. You basically, between until 89, you didn't have access to Western music. And then 6 turned 7, and then the big thing with Revolution and Democracy was actually MTV and cable TV. But I remember Michael Jackson came, he was the first big artist to come play in Romania. I think it was 1990 or 1991, like really soon after the revolution, which to us kids was mind-blowing. Like, you couldn't, there were two different universes. You couldn't even understand or comprehend that something like that would happen. So I have friends in Bucharest whose parents wouldn't let them go to the concert. So they would just say they'd go out to take the trash out and then didn't come back the next day when they went to the concert. So that was kind of, I think that was the closest you could think of in terms of anything related to the U.S.
And now you're starting to do work back in not only Romania, but your hometown, mm-hmm. which is called what?
Reșița.
I can only say like I can't even say it.
Reșița. Say it. Reșița.
Reșița. I can say it very quietly. Good.
Can you say Țuica?
Țuica? Mm-hmm. I know Țuica.
It's schnapps. Yeah. That's the hardcore stuff. We're talking about booze.
I was like, that one I know. Wait, what's the sausage called again?
Mich.
I forgot what my question was.
That's how Țuica works. We're going to ask me about doing work in my hometown.
Does it still, I mean, I can't imagine it doesn't, but does it still feel like a totally different world? I mean, in terms of when you're like the U.S. and the Romania, when you're growing up feeling a totally different universe, or is it differently?
Well, it's very different because, I mean, they are different worlds, of course. And I was just home now for about almost 2 weeks or 10 days. It was the weirdest and the most intense, but also super awesome trip. It was different because back then, like when you're a kid, you only know what you know. You don't know what you don't know. You know, I mean, your horizons are... You don't know if you're missing something or missing out on something. Like, kids just don't think that way. It's just what you have, what's around you. That's all there is, and that's fine. That's all you need in a way, which I always thought was fascinating. But it was more, you only, you know, there was no internet back then either. So everything was happening, I think, at most through TV or movies. I definitely learned English, and my English has been skewed because of music and TV and, yeah, just films. So it seemed more like it seemed like Hollywood, basically, or it seemed like an abstract foreign alien world, not something that you could ever participate in, but not like, oh, that's denied to me. It's just you didn't even, it's not something you were longing for or necessarily wanted by any means. It's more like, oh, it's something else that's there. And now, I mean, they are different universes, but to me, they're both very familiar in different ways. And I think I always take joy in the contrast between the different universes because it gives you perspective. And that's something that I find extremely healthy.
Do you find approaching work there different? Like, I mean, in terms of part of it's a language thing. I guess, do you think differently because you're in Romanian versus in English?
No, absolutely not. I don't think the language makes a difference, really, in that sense. And there's a fundamental different way of working because you're dealing with, like, just the interactions are very different. People are very different in the way they interact, and just the way of work is different. So, for example, with this project, I got approached by the mayor of my hometown on Facebook. He likes Facebook Messenger a lot better than email. So that's how part of the conversation started. And then, of course, there's just every local condition. And if you work internationally, especially in, like, you know, not the usual Western places, you have to first understand the kind of local politics or local ways of life. You can't bust in with your New Yorker expectations of having everything ready 24/7 and yelling at people and, you know, stuff like that. So not that everyone here would be yelling at each other. It's just a different way of operating. But I find that that's true no matter where you, in principle, pretty much wherever you work. Mm-hmm. I think it's first step is sort of understanding what are the local conditions, opportunities, but also challenges. I think that's always fun about working internationally.
Does Reșița, being your hometown, being that your family is there, I'm assuming that you stay with them when you're there?
Yes. No. I don't even know if there's a hotel in the city.
has that affected how you go about your work there? I'm just trying to think of, like, for example, I can't imagine, like, tangent. I'm very lazy when I go to San Diego because you just kind of, like, hang out with your parents and eat and surf and do nothing. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard for me to imagine actually clicking into work mode there. Has, like, do you have that same problem? Or am I just lazy in San Diego?
No, I think if someone was to call you for a meeting, or you would jump right into it. I don't think it's like, oh, I can only be lazy in San Diego.
Let me ask my mom.
No, no meeting. Sorry. No, my mom says no. The dog won't let me leave the house. No, I mean, it was funny because now I was home for 10 days or so, and I had the most New York-like schedule, the most intense schedule for 10 days. Usually it is relaxing going home and meeting friends and hanging out with people. And this time it was the opposite. It was like 24 hours with my parents, 24 hours of meetings, lecture, whatever, jury duty, stuff like that, and then meeting some people here and there, then, you know, catching up with New York schedule. So it was the most intense schedule ever. So the jump is fairly straightforward. It is funny in a way because, of course, it's the project that I'm talking about in my hometown is a very prominent one. Like, it's a huge thing, actually. And it's a small town, so everyone knows about it. And I've been keeping quiet, but I think the mayor is eager to make it public.
Facebook.
And, well, he has genuine intentions, and he wants to kind of draw the city in that, or kind of, yeah, just get everyone involved and be very transparent about the whole process. So I think at times my parents are like, everyone's asking us about it. But I'm not really sitting down or talking with my parents about it yet either. So I don't really approach things. Well, I think the big difference is I really know that place. I really know that hometown, and I really know the people. And I know what it needs, and I know what's realistic. So, of course, if you were to probably take any other architect from New York and ask them to do that project, they would approach it very differently. But I, while it's a huge project, my interest lies in the interest of the city, in nothing else, really. So that's what's really exciting to me about it. And it'll be a really amazing thing. I'm just excited this mayor had the balls in a way and the ability to do it, and it's actually happening. It's pretty crazy.
Can you talk about what it is?
Yeah, no. So weirdly enough, it ended up being my thesis project. So by complete chance, basically there's this huge funicular crossing my hometown. It's a half a kilometer long structure, which I'm not sure how, like a quarter mile long, I don't know, I'm not sure. Terrible.
Somewhere between a quarter and a half mile. I
don't get maths.
No, wait. Less than a quarter. Let's say a quarter. I don't even know. It's pretty long.
Just saying things. It's pretty long. So it's this huge structure that crosses the downtown, basically, at the height of about 10 stories. And it connects basically to hills. It used to carry stones from the quarry to the factory. And it stopped working about, I'm going to say, like 20 years ago, something along, well, maybe a little bit less. But basically, my hometown used to be a huge industrial center, especially in like the 1900s. Like, steel was being exported all over Europe. Some of the first steam locomotives or trains were being done there, things like that. But then during communism, or the last years in communism, that industry slowly started dying. The factories and everything hadn't been updated. There was no much progress happening, and the country was poor altogether. So those factories started closing over the years. Some of them are still kind of half alive, but they aren't the kind of resource for the city or the life of the city the way they used to be. And everyone used to work in them, like from my grandfather to my father. And so you have this huge thing that's very recognizable and very present. And actually, it used to have its, on top of it, where it's crossing the center, it used to have Reshitsa written big, kind of the way you would have Hollywood. Mm-hmm. But basically, the name was always written there.
Are you going to bring that back?
I hope so, yeah. I think so. I mean, the letters are still hanging there. It's really funny, actually. But basically, we used to hike on this place, like during high school, because you always do stupid things in high school. We would climb up and just, you know, that's what you do in high school, kind of all the things you're not allowed to. While it was fairly dangerous, it gave you a really nice perspective over the city, point of view that you normally wouldn't have. That's one. And two, it connects two hills, and the city is actually really beautifully spread along the valley between a few hills. Right, quite gorgeous, but you don't really have access to the nature around. It's just completely inaccessible. So most people don't have a place to actually take their don't know, kids, grandkids, dogs, whatever, or just go for a walk. You wouldn't have a green like park to just go for a walk if you wanted to. So the intention was bifold. On the one hand, it was more expensive to demo this thing than to just make it a safe place for people to enjoy. And on the other hand, it was also attempting to just make the ends of it publicly accessible and really just make that natural environment, which is gorgeous in itself, just more accessible and a safe place to be in. So it and so that was my diploma back then. Of course, it being a thesis project, it was a little bit more ambitious in terms of providing programs and activities to happen on it. And right now what we're trying to do is really sort of a minimal intervention, like what's the minimum you need to make it just safe and accessible and durable and make it last. And I really like that. I like infrastructural projects, and I like projects that, just infrastructural projects in general. And we're trying to also use that as a way for people who pass through town to stop and be interested in exploring it, because it's a through town on the way to the mountains, and you have a lot of people, just mountain people, hikers, skiers, people like that, just passing through the city on their way to. We have three lakes around us, a big mountain, quite a few nice villages with nice vacation houses and stuff like that. So it's trying to capture all the audience that normally passes through the city and start offering something back. But in the other hand, you know, I think it's really nice just for the city to not have this symbol of something basically dying, rotting away, and instead it showing that it can have its life, that it can stay alive, that to just maintain in a way that symbol of the industry in the city.
And this will be the first project, or is this the first project you do in your town?
Yes.
Was New York the first place you moved out of your town?
No, Sevilla in southern Spain was the first one where I was there for about 8 months or so.
That was during school? Or no?
During school. I actually was supposed to go to architecture school in Romania 6 years. So after the fourth year, I was supposed to go to Italy, to Milan, for an amazing fucking scholarship. It was a double master's in architecture. And he was my student then, Cooper. Awesome. I love my students. How's school?
If you guys want to come ask Juan any questions on air, just pull up a chair. I think that one's on.
It's happening.
Dom, nice to meet you.
Good to see you. Hi, come join. Well, I wasn't saying anything interesting, no?
I don't remember. Something about a double major.
Oh, yeah. No, there was a scholarship to Milan so I was like, learned Italian over the summer. I was about to leave. And then the Italian consulate didn't give me the visa. Huh. And it all got nicked. So then I was like, fuck it. I just need to go somewhere. So I ended up in Spain. Hi, guys.
Hi.
I think you have to speak into that thing.
Yes, they like it. You just have to be like an inch away from the mic.
Hello. Hi. This is fun.
Thanks for stopping by.
Course, yeah.
Don't you have school or something?
Not on air.
No, we just got out of class. We wouldn't do that.
Ever.
Let's skip class. You guys are a Cooper now?
Yeah. Cool. Second year.
Nice. Mm-hmm. How was Juana as a teacher?
Fantastic. We still talk about her. Like, oh, we missed that.
Oh, you have to get closer. Like,
oh,
really,
yeah.
Really
sorry.
We're not blackmailing them with anything.
No, never.
Sweet.
How many years is the program?
5 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And no teachers there nearly as good as Juana.
There's some amazing teachers there, though. It's a really awesome place. I had a lot of fun at the Cooper. You guys have a really good year, too.
Yeah.
I'm really curious what you guys are up to.
Yeah, no, right now we're working on, we were given this site in the Bronx to do a... what a professor calls a contemporary circus, mm-hmm. which is like, I think it's a lot of it is up to our interpretation, but it's like we're still trying to decipher it, but like it's sort of a multi-use kind of space for performance, mm-hmm. space for training, and space for learning. And then given the context of the site, what that really means. So it's a lot of like, what are we doing right now? but that's half of it, I think.
Do you think you'll teach there again? Wanna?
Sure. I mean, the school is great, and being in such a huge institution in New York, that's huge. And I like undergrad. Mm. I like young people because I think they don't have a preconceived idea of what architecture is to be yet, which means it's a lot more room to explore things and to be innovative. And I remember actually in the semester, so I taught with Benjamin Aranda and Julian Palacio. And in that exercise, we had a really fun brief. They had to invent a material, destroy it as a way, that's for academic purposes, as a way to understand what it was doing. Of course, we were getting emails. There's fire or fireworks in the hallway. What are you guys doing?
It's cool.
Yeah, a lot of burning of deadly, poisonous materials in the studio
room. Off
the
record? No, we try to keep things safe and healthy. but it was a lot of fun, and I remember. And then, of course, they had to build things back up. Yeah, don't let
them. We can turn
Sabrina's
that one on.
Try.
Can we do that?
But basically, I know on the student side there was a lot of pressure. But when are we doing architecture? And we're trying to. I mean, we were doing architecture in a way, but to try to enter through the back door, where you're not just doing a wall or whatever, a house or whatever. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It was a really good year. I was just, someone was asking me the other day about, someone was trying to do a thesis and they weren't sure what to do, and they knew they wanted to build with materials. And this is someone in grad school. And I'm like, look what these 18-year-olds did. And they're like, fuck, I need to get on top of stuff. So that was really, it's really awesome. I was really happy with the results. How did you guys feel about it?
I feel like, during the semester, there was a lot of when is this becoming? And I think even like after the semester ended, I was still like, okay, what was that?
Happened.
But thinking about it back now, I feel like this semester and the fact that it wasn't so traditional in the way that it was approached, it gave us a lot of like just that perspective. Like we don't have to think about it exactly like in the traditional sense about mm-hmm. we could just do the first quarter of the semester without even like doing a drawing, or let's just smash materials together mm-hmm. and then suddenly this becomes something of like architecture. Like as soon as we like, okay, now we have this down, it's like, what does that mean? And I think a lot of people are still like remembering that. But it was definitely like
there's trauma there, maybe.
Sweet. Works.
I was going to ask you, do you, either because of that class or just being in school in general, I guess you're only 2 years in at the moment, but do you have a different sense of what architecture is or what you could do architecturally than you did a year ago?
I think, I don't know, but it's definitely a question I've been asking myself lately about what I can do as an architect. Like if I graduate, what am I going to be doing? Mm. Like, is it going to be what my friends who just graduated are doing now, or is it going to be something completely different? And I think being there now and like seeing a semester like that, it definitely posed that question. Mm. Like this, it can be something mm-hmm. that I can't even like conceive of right now.
And you've still got 4 years of yeah. fucking you up to go. Very exciting.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to, wait, what time is it? Can you talk about the interview you had with Ares when you first got hired at Rex? Or I guess in terms of like, I mean, I don't talk about the details of that interview, but in terms of like, obviously you applied to an office in New York.
Mm. I deleted the email after I sent it. I saw it on Archinect. I always have a hard time explaining it because this was 2006 and the internet wasn't back then what it is today, which always sounds weird and I was like, makes me sound feel
just a small starting
ancient
thing.
But basically I saw on Archinect a post that OMA was looking for architect for students, and they were just asking to submit portfolios, and it never before crossed my mind that an office like OMA would hire students and based on their portfolios. I don't know what I was thinking before. I just wasn't, again, to me OMA was like Hollywood on TV. You don't think, how do I get before behind it? You know, everyone has perfect boobs, perfect everything. Like, you're not, you're never going to be on the other side. And not that you necessarily want it. You're, it just doesn't cross your mind. And yeah, so I sent my portfolio. I had only, in Romania, we weren't doing portfolio. So we only did one because I was looking for a summer job. And I sent that email and deleted the email because I was like, I need to forget that I did this. It seemed incredibly audacious at the time that I would even dare to do such a thing. And 2 months later, Daniel Pawny. Hi, Daniel. He responded and is like, we'd like to schedule an interview.
2 months.
I know, outrageous. But that's because they were... out buying OMA and they became Rex in the process.
They had other things to worry about. They had to think of a name.
Then we did a Yahoo Messenger interview with ours. I don't remember the specifics. I remember being extremely nervous.
Could you see him? I mean, like, was it a video?
No. He could see me, though. Weird, huh? That would not fly in 2018, Aris, just so you know. Very voyeuristic. And I can't remember what it was about. I think I just walked him through my portfolio of sorts. I don't know. I had Josh had just done the TEDx talk where he was talking about Seattle Public Library, which had just opened. So there are the wings of all of that. So, but that's all I had as a starting point. So, yeah, I don't know. And then they offered me
Did he offer you the job during the interview?
I think so. I'm not sure. I generally do not remember. I'm not sure, actually. Good point.
Well, I mean, I was just curious, like, if during the interview you knew you were getting a job or not, or you're just like, well, this is not going to happen.
No, it was a good interview, obviously. but you can sense if it's going well or not. Like, I think if you're able to have a conversation with someone during an interview, you do sense at least. Because to me, if you feel like you're not being yourself, or if you feel like you have to fool someone about something in an interview, then it's not going to go well. But it felt like a normal, like a genuine conversation, and he had questions, but nothing where I felt like, I don't know how to answer or something like that. I'm like, yeah, there was nothing weird or suspicious about it. So, yeah.
So you ended up working at Rex, Rex, and then Sana Herzog, Architect for Humanity, Family. Just kidding. But with the other ones, anyway, was there a point where you felt comfortable or deserving? Maybe that's not quite the right word, but to be in that Hollywood level of office or type of that level of architecture?
To be deserving?
Clearly
I deserve it. I don't think any of us deserve anything, really. Rex had been huge by all means, and the jump was the biggest. And I told Josh and Aris when I left that they fucked things up for me in terms of enjoying any other job, because it was kind of a magic time. I mean, you know it, but basically it was before the crisis. There was lots of money. There was huge. Everyone was rooting for Rex. The architecture world's kind of eyes were on them. And it was a very young office. And, Josh and Aris were not even 40, I think.
No, they were 35 or something.
Please don't say 35. they were young, and our average age, like, I remember we were Jack wasn't even like 21 at the time. He was using a fake ID to get into clubs. He's the one who would get us into all the clubs. The biggest learning curve in there, it was an amazing place. I felt they gave me so much responsibility, way more. Like, I think one time, what's his name? Christopher. Asked me to. Augusta. I was trying to Christopher Augusta. I was in charge of figuring out the location of the funicular for entering the Museum Plaza, which was this like huge tower project. And Christopher Augusta was like, "Yeah, you want to join this conversation with Arup and tell the engineers what the parameters are?" And I'm like, "I hope you have someone double checking this." But I felt that there was a lot of that where they would just instill a lot of responsibility. Or one time, I think I was hanging out with you, and Aris came over and was like, can you join this conversation with these architects who are new in the office? We have a feeling they're working on a competition. It's not going right. And then Dong went into the meeting, and then Aris comes to me and I'm like, why aren't you coming? I'm like, oh, me too? And he's like, yeah, and don't do stuff. Tell them what to do. I'm like, what? So I felt they were, I was supported or kind of encouraged somehow. And I was hungry. I was eager to be there and to participate and incredibly passionate. So they basically instilled a sort of audacity in me, a sort of claim as like, wait, if you actually just do what you believe in, there are ways of achieving what you care for. So basically I felt there was a huge point for me. It wasn't, I mean, it was everything else that was happening too, but mostly the fact that, yeah, if you work for it, you can just do it. And I remember being, I remember the first day when I came to Rex, the morning of, as I was walking down on Varick Street, Josh, who is like, I don't know, 2 meters tall, very tall, 6 feet, something, basketball height, basketballer height.
And very
he
wide.
Was and he was walking from the opposite direction down the block. Like, I recognized him. It's kind of like one of those New York scenes where you see one head sticking out from the crowd. And then we were about to walk at the same time in the building, and I couldn't. I just let him go, and I walked around the block. I was like, this is too much. But I was like, I was thinking, how am I going to be in this office? I'm not a native English speaker, deal with all these kids from all these like fancy schools. I was like, fuck, what's gonna go down now? But then end up being amazing and getting a sense, understanding just that doesn't matter who you are, what your background is. It was a very international office from everywhere. Everyone seemed smarter and brighter and more beautiful than anything I could relate to. So it was very jarring in the beginning, but then the big learning curve too was like, everyone's just people. Mm-hmm. No matter what school they're from, no matter, you know, what the context from, there's some good, some bad, some with different outlooks altogether on things. And that was incredibly liberating, basically. I think that was another kind of huge kind of mind-blowing thing.
Do you know of any, because that was a really particular moment, even in just Rex alone, mm-hmm. let alone architecture as a whole, especially for students looking to get a job at some point. Can you think of any offices that have that kind of encouragement or vibe, or in a way forcing you out of what you thought you could do kind of atmosphere at the moment? Not like I know that many offices, but
I think it's in the way I would look at, because it's not about what necessarily happened to me or even that encouragement. I would look at it like whoever's work you admire, just go there, just knock on their door, just harass them and try to understand, try to learn how they're, you know, whatever fascinates you about what they're doing and try to learn from that. I think that's what it was for. That's what kind of was valuable for me. That's one thing. The other thing that I also always encourage people in doing interviews is, I think it's a hard thing to do, but you're interviewing the office as much as they're interviewing you, meaning you are stuck with those people for, you know, 6 months, a year, so on and so forth. So the experience of an office is intimately tied to the people you end up working with, whether it's on a project or the office culture altogether. And if that's not a good relationship, or if that's someone, if it doesn't work out, then it's not gonna turn out to be good, basically. So the kind of personal relationship matters hugely, or the kind of just mutual respect that you find in someone. I'm sure that doesn't answer your question, but I can't pick. I mean, there's a lot of really young, amazing offices, and I think what's really nice about the times we live in, it's a lot of a more, I think, younger crowd too, because it's a lot easier in a way to get stuff done, even if at different scales, but then a lot more collaborative than what the field was back then. This was pre-crisis, so everyone was just doing work in China or Dubai or whatever else. Like, the scale was really out of reach, I would say, and it was way more Starhitech driven. And right now, I feel at least those big offices, they're still there doing amazing work, but to me, that's not where the interesting things are happening.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's also like, I mean, I don't know of any offices, I don't know that many offices in the internal culture, but that were like that period of Rex, but I feel like the one big takeaway also was to not get intimidated by offices, mm-hmm. or the people in the office, regardless, right. in a way of hierarchy or experience level, right. or fame of the office itself. Because, right. like you said, there's go work for the offices you love, but then there's a lot of offices that you love and you go there and it's kind of disappointing.
Right.
I think Rex at that period was not that. And I think it was, right. quite the opposite. You're like, oh shit, this is actually, right. way more awesome than even I anticipated.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the case with most offices. I think a lot of them are like, oh, it's just a job, or their work could still be incredible, but oftentimes it's actually maybe not as incredible as you'd expected.
Yeah, but I think having being critical from the inside, it was a huge luxury. I don't think everyone was a good fit. I don't think, as you know, the Rex experience wasn't amazing for everyone. For a good number of people, it was frustrating and difficult, and it was everything than this kind of amazing thing that it was for us. So again, I do think it has to do with what one is looking for. So certain people are going to prefer learning how to, I don't know, draw houses or be in a small scale office, or it can vary wildly. Like the Rex wasn't a universal blanket amazing place. It just happened to be for us or a bunch of us who are still very close now. The right fit or the perfect timing at the perfect moment, but I don't think it was universally true. And then on the other hand, yeah, I think being critical from within is a huge experience. Like, that was sauna for me. So basically after Rex, I went home, did my thesis, and then I was like, it's too soon to come back to Rex because it was too perfect of a fit and it was my first big experience. I was like, I need to try other stuff. So, and I was like, okay, what's another place and another office that I'm interested in? And I tried sauna, so I ended up in Japan. And I didn't stay there for very long because I liked it and I admired it and I loved the work. But I realized it wasn't my way of doing things. So personally, it wasn't as rewarding or fulfilling as it just wasn't a good fit. And then I found another opportunity and went off for Africa, and which seemed way closer to home in terms of what I was interested in. But having been... I feel learning, still having learned from sauna, okay, that's not for me. First, understanding how the office works is still a huge privilege, because I feel being in any office, it's such a, you know, it's such an intimate sort of world. It's like being adopted in a family. So being there was still hugely humbling. And then even understanding, okay, I'm not interested in this, taught me a lot about myself. So any experience in a way can be turned, any experience is productive. I never saw the sauna period as being a wasted period by any means.
How much of the, whether it's New York, Tokyo, Basel, Cape Town, I don't even know if you can separate it, but how much of your experiences there, perception of the work you were doing was down to the office and how much was down to the city?
City?
Like living in Tokyo, living in Cape Town, living in Basel, did that have a major... Do you think that affected how much enjoyment basically you were having at these places? Like the makeup of self for the cities?
I mean, the enjoyment, sure, but each place offers something different and something exciting. Tokyo, in a way, is the most fundamental because you don't live in Tokyo. I mean, you kind of do, but not really.
You mean when you're in sauna?
Yeah, because you're like, you basically start work at 12 p.m. If you're lucky, you go home at midnight, most likely at 3, 4 a.m. So it's not like you actually experience that a lot. But the clash with the Japanese culture is huge. But each of them were hugely impactful. I will say the work in Africa was more fundamentally life-changing than any of the other ones, if only because you can't separate, oh, I'm just doing work versus something else. We were also working with Architecture for Humanity, and we were working in some of the most hardest hit townships or places on a wildly different continent, and that was just incredibly, incredibly humbling. I still say we should all go once a year at least to Africa. It just puts things in perspective, and you realize how spoiled you are and how just spoiled we are.
I mean, I guess that was actually more of a setup for this question, which was, which we can kind of end maybe here. But so I've always thought of you as someone that moves around a lot. But you've been in New York 8 years?
Wait. 7 or 6.
2012? 2011?
Something like that. I'm not even sure.
Why are you still in New York?
Why not? I move around. I still move around. Ask me. I mean, last month I was here tonight, 2 days.
It's true. I guess you're not in New York that often.
Yeah. But I think that's the only way to live in New York, by moving out, by leaving it a lot. I mean... To me, New York. For me, New York is an easy place to be in because it feels like an airport. Like everyone has a suitcase, everyone has a dream, everyone's here for a reason. It's not an easy place to be in. That's one. Two, because everyone's from everywhere, you're never the weirdo. And I feel most other places around the world, they're always about kind of a regional, like local type of thing, and you have to adjust or fit.
Status quo, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and you have to fit in. But even like whether it's about the news, the music, all of that stuff, like in Basel, for example, you know whatever. I don't know what kind of music they're listening to. But basically, it becomes about a local sort of culture. And New York's culture isn't that. The world culture is New York culture somehow. And that makes it very easy. Like, this is the perfect place for gypsies like me, basically. So that being said, I mean, again, I don't care so much about the place. I don't know if it's just me, but I also feel New York isn't what it necessarily used to be, just in terms of being a place of opportunity. I think it's a great place to meet people and run into people. But I think it's also losing a lot of its potential in terms of kind of just making something of the energy it creates.
Maybe you're just getting old.
No, I already said that. Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. But I mean, I don't know. When we were young, you could afford rent in the Lower East Side or whatever on Manhattan. Now I don't know to what degree that's still possible. But yeah, I mean, my outlooks and my priorities have changed too, for sure. I'm sure New York will always be New York too.
Do you have any questions for your students?
Me. Not really. No, I think Don kind of asked you or touched on it. Did you guys have any questions? Or what made you come by? Have you listened to the other podcast?
Yeah, a little bit. No, I'm just like, I think when I saw you were doing this, I thought this was like a really exciting forum for like ideas to be shared, but also in this like really accessible way. Hmm. As opposed to like a lecture behind closed doors that's like maybe posted later and then you have to go look for it. But now that it was really exciting when I heard you would be here, I thought like we should just come by and say hi.
Sabrina's just nodding. Well, thanks guys for coming by. That's sweet.
Of course, thank you.
Thanks, Juana.
Thank you.